Publishing. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you tune in again next week.
Yes, we must continue to practice all public health measures. Follow local guidelines for gatherings, maintain physical distancing, wash your hands, wear a mask, and download the COVID Alert app. If you have symptoms, even mild ones, stay home. Protect yourself and others. Learn more at canada.ca/coronavirus or 1-833-784-4397. A message from the Government of Canada.
Hi, I'm David Suzuki, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Information to grow the brain.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
Welcome to Dragon Root Radio, feminist waves brought to you by CKUT and the Center for Gender Advocacy.
The Dragon Root Media Collective aims to bring you feminist content that challenges interlocking systems of oppression and makes space for voices systemically silenced. Dragon Root understands media as being inherently political and emphasizes media skill sharing as a form of resistance.
We meet every other Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Center for Gender Advocacy and welcome anyone interested in learning or producing feminist media to join. No skills required.
Leticia Trendefier is the music and events director and magazine editor for Never Apart, and is also the organizer of the online speaker series, Conversations in Environmental Justice. We had the chance to speak with Leticia on the upcoming workshops and the importance of highlighting environmental justice and its many intersections. So to start, can you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about Never Apart?
Yeah, so my name is Leticia Trendefier. I am the music director and also sort of events coordinator, communications person, and magazine editor. We're a very small organization, so we kind of all wear a few hats. And Never Apart is a nonprofit organization which attempts to bring about social justice and spiritual awareness, kind of broadly defined, via art, culture, and music events. So initially, I guess my role was very music-focused, organizing events, sort of parties, showcases, workshops, artist talks, kind of all around this music theme. But now with the pandemic, and also via my own interest in sort of expanding what my mission and what I do there, we've pivoted a little bit from the music stuff into more environmental stuff, which is still part of the mission, but hadn't been fully developed into the programming. So I guess with the pandemic and the restrictions that imposes on gatherings and all that stuff, it was kind of a moment where we sort of thought, okay, how are we going to continue to, you know, make things happen? So my personal interest in sort of environmental stuff kind of came to the forefront, and I was like, why don't we just, you know, maybe my title might be music director, but let's just kind of expand what I'm doing and get into these other areas, which are I think on a lot of people's minds. So Never Apart also has a strong queer component. People kind of know it as a space where a lot of queer art is shown, and there's various events around themes related to the queer community. We've been around for 5 years, and I've been working with them for three. So that's Never Apart.
You organized an online speaker series, Conversations in Environmental Justice. Can you tell us a bit about the intention behind this series and why it's important to highlight at this time?
Yeah, so as I was saying, sort of my kind of role there has kind of been put into question a little bit in terms of like how do I, you know, what kinds of things am I gonna do now that we don't have music events as a possibility. And I think that what came out of it, so it was a series, I think, of compounding factors that, you know, were happening around the world, the resurgence of massive social justice uprisings against police violence, mass incarceration, but also like the rising far right globally. And also kind of just like what, you know, I think people were tuned in at this moment of course, a global pandemic and also impending environmental crisis. So I think a lot of people who are artists and work in the art world, musicians, DJs, which are I also am sort of an artist, DJ, etc., kind of maybe we're like, okay, what is my role right now in this whole global situation? So I think for me, what was really coming out of these discussions was that there's so many links between all of the things that are happening, and that you know, social justice environmental justice cannot really be discussed meaningfully without the social justice element. So the idea behind the series was kind of to bridge those things and make sure that they're being sort of talked about and integrated with each other, because you know, domination, racial terror, colonial control, they all intersect and with environmental destruction. And there's also the danger of, like, if, you know, environmentalism can become sort of whitewashed and greenwashed, and even worse, can go into eco-fascist territory where the focus is, like, on population control versus, you know, as a solution to environmental problems. So I think, to respond in a sort of nutshell to your question, like, what's going on right now in the world, it felt like an important time to bridge the conversations that we might be having separately, and of course that have been happening for a long time among many people and activists and scientists and people on the ground. But I think for me personally, it was a time to sort of find a way to contribute to that by inviting people who have a meaningful contribution to environmental and social justice, whether explicitly or not. It might just be like, you know, people who have been working on this their whole lives and whose identity is wrapped up in these questions because of how it all works. So that was kind of the impetus behind the series. And also because now everyone's kind of, I guess, more comfortable with Zoom and kind of attending conferences, and there's been an interesting sort of opening up of almost like citizen education with all these conferences happening for free online. And so it's an interesting moment, I think, to offer sort of spaces of discussion and citizen education outside of academic circles for these things to be talked about, and for people that we might not have had access to if the pandemic hadn't happened, because now, you know, everyone's at home, so people might be a bit more open to accepting invitations that maybe before would have been a bit more complicated to make happen, because people are busy, and people, especially people who are, you know, environmental activists and all, you know. So that's kind of it. Yeah.
I want to get into tomorrow's workshop, but you already had the, I forget what it's called, the first event. Can you tell us a bit about that and how it went, and
So the first event was the sort of kicking off of the series, which is called Conversations in Environmental Justice. And it was with Anuradha Rao, who is a conservation biologist from out west, and who works with, she wrote a book called One Earth, P- people of color defending the environment, and her work is very much about bridging environmental justice and social justice, and sort of highlighting the contributions and the voices of BIPOC people in the work of environmental conservation and environmental activism. And that was really wonderful. It was based around her book. She read some passages, and there was a really nice discussion happening in the chat about, you know, about different things people have in their, you know, are thinking about right now. You know, one thing that came out is, you know, what are the most important things that we can focus on right now? How do we maintain hope? Things like that. So Anuradha was a really wonderful first speaker because she was very generous with her words, her work, and very engaging as a presenter who made use of Zoom in quite creative ways, you know, kind of asking people to engage in different activities, like turn your camera on if you've experienced this, turn your camera off. So it was really a nice way to sort of start the talk or the series and set the tone for, like, you know, this is what we're discussing in the series, and we're going to be talking about, you know, how environmental issues are very much intersected by social justice issues and issues around, you know, who is at the forefront and at the front lines, not only of receiving or being the first ones kind of impacted by the actual effects of climate change, but also the people who have been fighting on the front lines for so long, and whose voices really need to be integrated in this conversation.
So tomorrow's workshop is Indigenous Environmental Activism in the Amazon. Can you tell us a bit about the speaker and what people can expect from the workshop?
Yeah, so Nina Gwalinga is a truly really inspiring figure. She's an international advocate for the rights of women, Indigenous peoples, and climate justice. And she comes from a family of Indigenous environmental activists. She's Swedish and Quechua from the Sarayaku community in the Ecuadorian Amazon, where she was born and raised, and where she's been involved in advocating for Indigenous and territorial rights from a very early age. There was some oil companies who in around 2011, I believe, violently entered the Sarayaku lands with military troops that were provided by the Ecuadorian government, and the people of Sarayaku successfully forced out the oil companies and the military and won a historic case against the government at the Inter-American Court of Human Rights. And at 18 years old, Nina Gwalinga represented the youth of Sarayaku in the final hearing of the case, which, again, they won. So it was really the setting of a landmark precedent for Indigenous rights across Latin America. And throughout her life, she's been, you know, a national and global advocate for the protection of the Amazon rainforest, Indigenous rights, climate. She's a spokesperson for Mujeres Amazonicas, a movement that unites Indigenous women in the Ecuadorian Amazon. And she's also a member of the Amazon Watch, a board member of the Amazon Watch in Sweden. And she's studying human rights at the University of Lund in Sweden. She's also a mom. So she's really a wonderful figure. And she's going to be discussing, you know, her path, her current challenges, what's going on in her community, communities, and how social environmental justice are linked for her in her sort of lived experience and in her activism. So I think that'll be a really wonderful, wonderful talk. And sort of, I guess there's also a whole generation of youth, because now she's maybe 26. And she started all this when she was like around 10 years old. So there's a really nice sort of generation of youth kind of coming up and kind of like taking no, I don't know if I should say a bad word on the radio, but like taking none of it from the sort of neoliberal, like, you know, establishment trying to be like, hey. So this is really inspiring. It should be a really, really wonderful talk.
Can you speak to why it's important to include and center Indigenous environmental activism in this series about environmental justice?
Yeah, I think it's really, as I was mentioning before, Indigenous peoples and people of color, racialized people, have been at the front lines and have been the first ones to have to be victims of environmental destruction and the effects of climate change, which has been caused by, extractivism and capitalist sort of greed and industrialized societies. But also because their organizing and activism has been so important, and has been so central to on the ground work, which is not, which I think must be centered because we, as I was saying, there's a danger of sort of environmental movements being co-opted by the far right, to sort of even have make sort of excuses for anti-migrant and anti-immigration policies and saying that environmentalism is actually caused by too many people, which is false. There's an abundance in the world and the problems we're seeing are caused by greed and by hoarding and by extractivism. And also I think these are the voices that point to a way forward that's a telling of a different story that we need to sort of put at the forefront. I'm currently reading Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer, who's a Potawatomi scientist, and who talks about this idea of merging, not merging, but sort of reconciling indigenous wisdom, scientific knowledge, and these worldviews, which are quite different. And she says, she cites actually Gary Nabon, and saying that we can't meaningfully proceed with healing, with restoration, without restoriation. So, in other words, our relationship with the land cannot heal if until we hear its stories. But who will tell them? And I think that this is a really key question. And I think the answer is Indigenous and people of color, because the more we advance in sort of thinking through how everything works together, the more we realize that there's a connection of all things and living beings, and even sort of like hyper advanced science kind of comes to these conclusions. It's like, well, this was part of sort of the knowledge of Indigenous peoples across all of the world since time immemorial. So we should be listening to those voices and those stories, because they point to a way out of the mess that capitalism, imperialism, and sort of extractivism have the mess that they've gotten us into. So that's why it's important, according to myself and many others.
In December, is a workshop on mycosymbiosis with William Padilla Brown. For our listeners who aren't familiar with this term, or William, can you tell us a bit about mycosymbiosis and its significance to environmental justice?
Yeah, so mycosymbiosis is a kind of a term that William Padilla Brown has coined. It's the name of his mushroom research and production business based out of Pennsylvania. And mycosymbiosis comes from sort of compounding of two words, myco, meaning which relates to mushrooms and fungi, and symbiosis, which is a close cooperative or interdependent relationship. So mycosymbiotics means a collective way to strive to develop mutualistic and beneficial relationships with all that is around us and the people and other beings that we work with. So I'll tell you a little bit about William. So William Padilla Brown is a social entrepreneur. He's a citizen scientist, meaning that he's a self-taught sort of person who's worked on the ground and with these subjects throughout his life. Mycologist, which is someone who studies fungi and mushrooms. Amateur phycologist, which means someone who studies algae. Urban shaman, writer, vlogger, researcher, poet, father, musician, you name it. William is a both a creative and a sort of scientific person in a self-taught and sort of symbiotic way. So he is actually also a really important person because he is the leading person in the country, or possibly in the world, or at least in the English language, to have written about the cultivation of a type of mushroom called cordyceps mushroom. So so he's a really fascinating figure, a multifaceted, creative person. And he's going to talk about essentially his ideas around, you know, how we can look at mushrooms and fungi and learn about how they work and sort of maybe find ways to integrate that into the way we work within our social spheres and in our relationships with other living beings. So essentially I can sort of tell you a little bit more about the actual description of the talk. So he says homeostasis, which is the way biological systems self-regulate to maintain stability and continue to survive. So homeostasis will not be achieved without symbiosis with local systems, both social and ecological. Fungi are ancient organisms that have learned to live in balance with their local systems. Developing a mutually beneficial association with local fungi will lead to incredible insights: medicine, food security, ecological restoration, and much more. Follow my story into mycosymbiosis and learn how you can achieve symbiosis with your local systems by working and thinking like fungi. So so that's going to be really fascinating. And I think this is kind of goes in line with a kind of current movement to sort of like look at patterns in nature and try and sort of find ways to integrate those even in social systems, because nature works really well. So we could probably look at some of the ways in which those things happen and mimic them. So that's going to be really fun. And if you're into mushrooms and foraging and sort of like thinking about collaboration, mutual aid, all of these things, I think that's going to be a fantastic talk. So I'm really looking forward to speaking. I'm a super fan of William Padilla Brown too. So that's going to be like, I think I'm going to try and not be too like, you know, fangirly, but yeah.
With Montreal in lockdown, as you mentioned, many events have transitioned to online this year. Can you tell us a bit about how this transition has been for Never Apart and this series? And if you have any learnings from adapting to the circumstance, maybe in terms of how audiences connect.
Yeah, so I think that it's an interesting sort of moment of, as I was mentioning, you know, I can't really throw music events anymore, but this is maybe a time to sort of like take a pause from that sort of socialization, even though I miss it, a lot of people do. And maybe take this opportunity to learn. And as I was saying, I think this moment opened up an interesting educational opportunity for people who are not inside of academic settings to have access to speakers and lectures for free, for the most part, with people who would normally maybe, yeah, you would have to pay to see. And all that stuff. So that is kind of a positive point, I think. Although, of course, there's the danger of like Zoom fatigue, because those of us who work with computers and have to attend meetings and then sit for another for a workshop after being sitting all day, you know, of course, that's, you know, something we can't really work around very, very much at the moment. But I guess the way to do it is just to get people who have something really interesting to say and that people want to engage with. And there's a sort of interactivity, which is also allowed in these kinds of smaller Zoom events, where you can actually kind of directly ask a question to someone and have it addressed and even sort of interact in a direct way, where you can actually kind of turn on your mic and ask a question. So there's both good and bad from this moment, I think. But there's an opportunity for citizen education, which I think it's been important for us at Never Apart to sort of continue to think about how we can do it. And this has been one way. So getting people to connect over certain topics and bring interesting speakers to a public for free. But of course there's challenges, and in terms of, like, you know, there's a lot going on online. So how do you stand out? Well, I think it's not really a competition anyway. It's been really wonderful up to now, the kind of engagement we've had. So it just feels like you're creating these little spaces where people can chat and learn for free, and that's really positive.
What do you hope people take away from the series?
I hope that people see some examples of what actually is being done in the world by people who've been engaged with these questions for a while, and that and letting those people speak in with their own stories in their own words. Of course, I hope to highlight the crucial role of BIPOC activists and practitioners and their importance in the environmental justice movement. I hope people find moments of wonder and, dare I say, hope from these stories, and encouraging people to get involved and find a little piece of something they can do for this moment. And because it is, yeah, it's an overwhelming time. And I think that for me, there's ups and downs, and I think a lot of people are feeling this. And I've certainly been absolutely moved and touched by talks that I've seen online recently. And I hope this is one of them for people, and that it offers a space for discussion and for further involvement.
And if people want to learn more about Never Apart or attend the series, where can they go?
Yeah, so Never Apart, you can find Never Apart online on our website at neverapart.com. You can find the series in the events section of the website. But I've also made a little link if it's easier for people, bit.ly, a shorter link. So it's bit.ly/CEG-part1. That's maybe not the easiest, but you can go to neverapart.com and the event section, and you'll see everything there on Eventbrite. You just need to register to get for free to get the information and the links, the Zoom links, because it's happening on Zoom. You just sort of sign up and get the info on your email for the series. And we're hoping to do more next season. I'm sort of working on the programming right now. This series is meant to be kind of fluid and flexible and sort of follow different themes. This fall section, the part one, was really focused on this idea of how do we merge these concepts. And food is going to be on the table, figuratively and quite literally, hopefully. Discussions around, you know, different other topics involving the idea of, like, you know, our piece, how we fit into this whole piece of the discussion around climate, environment, how this all fits together, our bodies, creativity, because I think art and creativity is a part, and aesthetics are and have always been a part of social movements, and aestheticizing our values via art making, banner making, all of these things are part of how these movements can create joy and can create belonging. So all this to say, it's open-ended. It's going to be announced when it's finalized. But join us for the first part, and you'll probably get on the list to be able to see what's up next. So hopefully you join us. This would be great. It's been really wonderful so far. Yeah, don't be shy. Come and chat with us.
Thank you so much for chatting with me with Drawing Root today. It was really awesome to hear more about these events and get a bit. Well, I almost choked on all the dough. As the words were trying to leave my... Thank you.
That was our interview with Leticia from Never Apart. Up next, we had the chance to speak with Evie, who organized the third edition of the event Storytelling is a Love Language by the South Asian Youth Collective. Now, this event did happen a couple days ago, but we had the chance to speak with Evie before the event launched. Storytelling is a Love Language aims to decolonize the act of storytelling and bring people together to share an intimate evening of connecting as authentically as possible. Here to tell us more about the event is Evie.
My name is Evelyn. I also go by Evie, which is pronounced like the Pokemon, Evie, but it's not spelled like the Pokemon's name. I am a storyteller. I call myself storyteller, but also content producer. I work with creatives on a regular basis, kind of, working on their personal story branding and stuff. But what I really, really like is writing and telling stories that everybody has a story. That's kind of how I put it. And storytelling as a love language is where, the collective, the South Asian collective approached me because they've been doing an event called Storytelling is a Love Language. And for the third event, they wanted to give space for Black storytellers and Indigenous storytellers. And they kind of reached out to me and we've been collaborating on that. The event is, like I said, around storytelling. And why is it a love language? Is because we find that, like, despite the increasing role of technology, like, in our lives, really, oral storytelling continues to be something that is used, like, across the world, right? Mm-hmm. So we wanted to kind of bring that atmosphere of kind of like when we hear back, old tales, your grandma had stories, your great grandma, your great aunt had stories, to kind of, open our mind to the world through like the stories of others. So this event, this third edition specifically, the theme is lived experiences. I chose it because I think, like I said, everyone has a story, and you'd be surprised how many people from, all different walks of life could have lived something similar to you. And you can bring some joy, you make people feel something to your life experiences. And so I know it's a bit broad of a topic, but that's what I like about it, is that anyone can make it what they want, right? Like, any story is good. Your personal experience is your truth. Your life is your truth, and your stories and experiences are your truth as well. And I wanted to invite people, especially Black storytellers, to, speak for themselves, especially in this climate. And, people's voices want to be heard, but we want to also hear good stories and love stories from those Black individuals.
Mm-hmm. So as you mentioned, this third edition, invites Black and Indigenous people specifically to apply. Can you talk a bit about that choice for this event and why it's important, especially today?
Okay. Well, the first two events, as I said, it's an event that originally was created by the Southeast Asian Collective. And their first two events, they invited Southeast Asian, people that identify as women, and due to what is happening in the world, especially around towards the end of May, they felt the need to give Black people and Indigenous people a voice. And so I think in this climate, I think their voices are important, but what I was drawn to is not necessarily give a voice for, yes, there is time for activism, but I think there is also time to come together as a community and just kind of listen to each other a little bit, to be in a moment where we're all kind of just listening to each other, listening to each other's experiences in a space that isn't necessarily like, because when we think activism, you know, some people can be angry, some people agree, disagree, but this event specifically is kind of just make it, kind of not make it light, but to bring, to give a different type of voice, to give, to hear different type of voices, because we also have happy Black voices out there and happy Indigenous voices out there, and we kind of wanted to invite that in.
The event is storytelling, so can you tell us about, I guess, the choice of oral storytelling as a medium? Obviously it has a long lineage, but maybe about its role today.
So its role today, I think people don't see it as something that is as important as technology. A lot of people are texting, a lot of people are video chatting. But if one thing that I think we should start to think about is how now people are going towards like voice messaging. Now you see all these apps, you have the option for voice notes. I think people still value oral storytelling, to hear a story from your friend or from anyone, you know, like with their voice, and to hear their intonation, and that everything about the story is enhanced because of the person's voice, because you're hearing the story. So I think it's still very important, even though people don't realize it. I think it's part of our lives. And I think that's what makes it important, even if people don't realize how important it really is to them.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the event description, it names one of its goals as decolonizing the act of storytelling. Can you tell us a bit more about what it means to decolonize storytelling?
Yes. It's to tell your story from... It's to tell your story. It's to tell the story of your people. It's to reclaim basically the narrative that people are trying to push onto you. So it's to allow people, that's why the center is around Black and Indigenous people, is we hear so many stories in the media. We read stories, even, you know, history books have been written with a specific narrative, you know, depicting Black people as a certain way, depicting Indigenous people as a certain way. And so to kind of take it back and to say, hey, I have a voice, and this voice actually matters. And so these events is to allow these groups, you know, all these different groups that are, that aren't always, that, you know, aren't the strongest voice all the time, you know, and to say, here's a space for you to, like, here's a space for you to tell your story and to make us see the other side, or to make us understand who you are better, instead of going to these mainstream outlets. So to decolonize basically is to, yes, to, you know, to take those stories that we've heard, those history books that we, all these whole stories that we learn in high school and so on, and to say, hey, there's actually a different meaning to this. There's actually, you know, the full story is that, you know, X, Y, Z happened. So it's to kind of take the whitewash history, which I'm sorry to say, which that's what colonizing, right? So it is known that colonizers, or, you know, Europeans were the one that colonized most of the world. So it's to take away that that aspect of, you know, the victor. Sorry, I'm thinking in French right now because my first language is French, but it's to take away this, so it's to kind of like take it back and to say, hey, like, I know this is what you read in the history books, but there is a different side to my people. There is a different side to my culture, and I am here to tell it, and I am here to make it, to kind of take space and to challenge what the world, how the world, like how we were told we should live certain things or be a certain way.
Mm-hmm. The theme, as you mentioned, for this third edition is lived experiences. Can you tell us a bit about, I guess, the organizing of this event, but mainly how you came about selecting this as the theme for this year?
It's funny, but we were in the meeting, and I don't know, it just came to mind because, as I said, I love listening to people's story. I love listening to hearing about people's background, because I think that even as a society as a whole, we are the product of our experiences, you know, what we've been through as a society. And it's also true for people. We are who we are today based on our experiences, what we've seen, what we've heard, and even what we've been told in the past, you know, can affect and can affect our stories and our beings. So lived experiences for me was a way to allow as much room for the storytellers to tell us something that is theirs and that we can leave the event with, and also be touched as they were touched by that experience.
Mm-hmm. Another interesting point about the event is in the call out, it mentioned that the stories don't have to be memorized or structured, quote unquote, structured properly. Can you tell us a bit more about that and that choice?
Yeah. Again, it's to really give the room to the storyteller to really give us a story that is kind of organic. So to kind of give us the story organically. Some people are really good at memorizing, but others aren't. But that doesn't make them less of a good storyteller because they couldn't memorize a 10-minute piece. So we really wanted to give room for every story to be shared and for every experiences to be heard. I just thought that it would allow, like, we didn't want to restrain or like constrict the storytellers into a box. And that was another way that we found in doing that.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously this year the event will be online. Can you tell us a bit about, it's the third edition, so can you tell us a bit about how it's adapted and how you expect that to impact the event?
Yes, so we did think about it, and we're wondering if maybe things would go back to quote unquote normal at one point, but we decided to keep it we had to do it online, and I believe Zoom was a good space for us because it allows, you know, the maximum amount of people. And for sure, for me, I'm not gonna lie, it's going to be my first time moderating an online event. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what to expect, but I am taking notes from all the Zoom events I have attended. Mm-hmm. We're trying to make it as, we're trying to make it as like, communautaire as mm-hmm. possible, but we couldn't because of the pandemic. So Zoom, I found, was a good way because it allows a maximum amount of people, and also the breakout rooms allows if some of the storytellers need to kind of be separated for a little bit and kind of recenter before they tell their stories. So it was a good, was the best option for what we wanted to do. And, like I said, I'm really excited actually to try it, because I do think it's going to be, we may have, the future events maybe for the next few months may have to be online. So I'm excited to try it first time with this event, and,
Awesome.
What do you hope people take away from this event, both the participants, the storytellers, and the audience?
I hope they take time to listen to other people more. I hope that at least one story they heard touches them and renews the que ça renouvelle en fait l'idée ça renouvelle en fait l'idée de the storytelling pour eux. So to allow them to see like, hey, yes, your phone is cool, but I want people to leave this event wanting to, you know, sit around with their friend and just talk, or with their family, or to, you know, I want this event to make people, you know, go back to storytelling, go back to talking, go back to, you know, the oral art of, you know, storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if people want to, I believe you're still accepting submissions.
Yes.
So if people want to participate, where can they go?
So they can, for, I think you're going to put maybe the link to the event in the description of the show or something, but they can always email us at storytellingisalovelanguage@gmail.com. So basically the name of the event, Storytelling is a Love Language, all in one word. We will send them a form, as well as on the Facebook page. The form is available directly on the Facebook page of the event. And they can also, email, or DM me, or I don't know if, you know, any socials, again, socials at the end, and just say that you want to participate and we will put you on. We don't have much of restrictions. It's open to everyone. We're hoping to have as many storytellers as possible. Of course, if we like get to 20, we'll have to restrict, but for now there is still some space. So I invite everyone that would like to participate to come through. So it's storytellingisalovelanguage@gmail.com. Oh, and I wanted to add that, when participating, we want to have as many faces up as possible to mm-hmm. make the storytellers, you know, comfortable, because their faces are going to be popping up on the screen. Don't be shy when you enter the room. Just like telling people that, you know, we want to really make it like a community event and to kind of have people come together. So basically the event for me, the way I see it, is like a sitting around like I don't know, fire or something, and just discussing and each other, like telling a story about each other. So yeah, just really, I don't have much more to say. I think that the event will speak for itself. It's just very straightforward. I want people to come together and take a break from the climate right now that is happening and just be in a moment of listening to one another and sharing experiences.
Well, thank you so much again.
We've come to the end of today's edition of Dragonroot Radio. I'd like to thank both our guests on today's show, Leticia from Never Apart and Evie, who organized Storytelling is the Love Language, an event that happened on November 21st. Thank you so much for listening, and be sure to tune in 2 weeks from now for more reports on gender-based issues.
To make all this summer. be pledge resistant.
What's up? This is Saul Williams chilling here in Montreal, here on CKUT. Peace.
We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war.
Sound.
C. K. K.
U.
T. T. 90.3 FM.
Another reliable communication channel.
When your parents need your help, you're there. When your kids say something's wrong, you're there. When your friends have a rough day, you're there. Be there for yourself the way you're there for others, as it's normal for these uncertain times to bring out negative emotions or anxiety. If you're finding it difficult to carry out daily tasks, there are solutions. Visit quebec.ca/gettingbetter or call Info Social 811. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT
Radio.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
Public health guidelines and follow self-isolation instructions. Self-isolate if you have symptoms. Self-isolate after testing. Self-isolate if the test is positive. Self-isolate when you return from a trip. And self-isolate when you've been in contact with someone who's tested positive. Self-isolation is important. Please, take it seriously. Learn more at quebec.ca/self-isolating. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening and welcome. You are listening to Underground Sounds on CKUT, broadcasting at 90.3 FM and online at ckut.ca. I'm your host, Nick Schofield, with you every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m., playing all Canadian independent music with a local focus on artists from Montreal. This is the Monday, November 23rd, 2020 episode. Tonight, I will be airing a mix of music that I am personally so excited to share with you. There is always such a plethora of new music out there to discover, and I hope to